This is Kathy coming to you with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, the 22nd of July. Starting out with the front page, volunteer monitors scope out issues for Conservation District by Nanette Beckett. During a recent walk through the trails at Rock Springs Conservation Area in Decatur, mother and daughter team Sarah Amanda and Diana Hall found cracker, popsicle and gum wrappers, and Band-Aid and some confetti. Confetti from birthdays, weddings, and celebrations are a problem sometimes, Mom Sarah Amanda said. Tedious to clean up, but also harmful to wildlife. Although the family enjoys their walks in nature, they were on a mission. The Halls are trail monitors, a group of volunteers trained by the Macon County Conservation District staff to scope out problems at the local conservation areas. It's extra eyes and ears on the trail, said Jenny Garver, Macon County Conservation District volunteer coordinator. At 12 years old, Diana knows how to do the job. We go every 1 to 2 weeks, she said. It's fun. We go on family hikes a lot anyway, her mom added. We were looking for volunteer activities, and she would be able to do also. According to Garver, the trail monitors help the Conservation District staff. They go out and walk along any of the district trails that we have, she said. The trail monitors can choose to walk any of the 5 conservation areas, which includes Rock Springs, Fort Daniel, Sand Creek, Friends Creek, and Griswold. They can go as often or as little as they want, Garver said. It really works into everyone's schedule. The Hall family usually visits Rock Springs because it's the closest conservation area to their home. But we do visit all of them, Sarah Amanda said. The goal is to add some new trails. The trail monitors often find downed or damaged trees or signage, bridges or walkways that need updates or repairs, and any other hazards, and sometimes garbage, Diana said. It's good to have those extra eyes and ears because our staff can't be out on the trails every single second of the day, Garver said. Trail monitors can also use the time with family and get some exercise, all while helping the environment and the community, the Hall family said. Sometimes Dad comes along and our dog, Diana said. Just bring poop bag and a leash, Sarah Amanda said about bringing dogs. Age is not a factor. However, at least one person in the trail monitoring group should be 18 years or older. Our youngest trail monitor was 5, and she walked with her parents, Garver suggested. High school and college students can earn community service hours as trail monitors. The volunteer work is ideal for some personalities due to the lack of interaction with the public. It can be kind of laid back, Garver said. It's really versatile. Safety is the only factor. As long as the trails are open during the day and there's no flooding, trail monitors are free to do their work. Garver tracks the volunteer hours so she can suggest areas that a trail monitor hasn't visited. The upcoming trail monitor class will include the basics of the job, descriptions of the 5 conservation areas, and information on what to look for while monitoring the trails. The next trail monitor training session will be from 10 to 11:30 Saturday, August 2nd at the Rock Spring National Center East Conference Room. Rock Spring Nature Center East Conference Room, 3939 Nearing Lane in Decatur. To register or learn more about the classes, you can email jgarver@maconccd.org by Wednesday, July 31st. Volunteers will sometimes take pictures of what they find and email it to me, Garver said. And as soon as we get those reports, I get them passed on to Operations Department that is in charge of our lands. The staff will also listen to suggestions offered by the trail monitors. Because as a staff, we don't see everything at all times, Garver said. It's good to hear other people's opinions and see how we can improve. After 25 years as a Conservation District employee, Garver admits she has missed a few details. I don't always pay attention to the signs on the trail, she said, because I've been here forever. The experience has been beneficial for the Hall family, they said. Volunteering and finding a way to give back can be easy, and something that you enjoy, Sarah Amanda said. It's a lot of fun and a great way to spend time together. And it's exercise, Diane added. This headline on the front page is from the business area. Pritzker seeks more regulatory authority over homeowners insurance business by Peter Hancock. Governor J.B. Pritzker is asking state lawmakers for more authority to regulate the homeowners insurance market in Illinois. His comments came after the Bloomington-based State Farm Fire and Casualty Company notified the Illinois Department of Insurance that it was raising premiums for residential property casualty insurance in Illinois by an average of 27.2%. In a statement July 10th, Pritzker called on lawmakers to pass legislation in the upcoming fall veto session that prevents insurance companies from taking advantage of consumers through severe and unnecessary rate hikes like those proposed by State Farm. The veto session is scheduled to begin October 14th. Over the past 6 years, our state economy has flourished based on transparent markets and fair competition, Pritzker said. State Farm's actions are antithetical to the core principles that the Illinois business community is built on. The increase will raise the average cost of a State Farm homeowner's policy in Illinois to about $2,175 a year, up from the $1,700 before the increase, according to State Farm. The higher rate took effect July 15th for new policies and will go into effect August 15th for renewals of existing policies. Although Pritzker was not specific about what kind of increased regulatory authority he wants lawmakers to consider, some consumer advocates have called for giving the State Department of Insurance broad authority to review, modify, or even reject proposed rate hikes. Under current state law, companies are required to file their rates with the Department of Insurance, and the agency can review consumer complaints to determine whether the rates being charged are consistent with those filings. The department also has the authority to conduct examinations to determine whether a company is paying out claims in a timely manner. It can also conduct examinations into a company's financial condition and solvency. But currently, according to the agency, Illinois is the only state in the country that does not prohibit rates from being inadequate, excessive, or unfairly discriminatory, which means it has no authority to reject a rate filing on those grounds. Douglas Howler, Director of Insurance for Washington-based Consumer Federation of America, described Illinois' law as among the most toothless in the nation. Almost every state in the country has a law that says for auto, home, and most other lines of insurance as well, rates cannot be excessive, he said in an interview. Now, it doesn't mean that the regulators around the country do a great job or even have the tools to enforce that very strictly, but Illinois doesn't even have the language that prohibits excessive rates for homeowners insurance companies. In April, CFA issued a report that said from 2021 to 2024, Illinois ranked second in the nation for having the greatest increases in homeowners insurance premiums. Average premiums in Illinois rose 50% over that period, more than any other state except Utah, where rates went up 59%. At a minimum, Illinois should empower the Department of Insurance to reject or modify excessive rate hikes, which would represent a basic consumer protection that residents in almost every other state enjoy. Abe Scar, director of the Illinois Public Interest Research Group, said in a statement in response to the report. Even with those increases, though, the report indicated that rates in Illinois were relatively modest compared to some other states, particularly those that experience more frequent natural disasters. Florida, Louisiana, and Oklahoma ranked highest in the average premiums. In recent years, lawmakers have given the Department of Insurance broader authority to regulate premiums in the health insurance market. Last year, Pritzker signed legislation giving the agency authority to renew and reject proposed rate increases in large group health insurance plans. That law also prohibited companies from engaging in certain utilization management practices that steer patients toward cheaper therapies and medications to lower payouts. Also last year, Pritzker named a new director of the agency, former State Senator Ann Gillespie, who had served on the Senate Insurance Committee. But the agency does not yet have that kind of regulatory authority over property casualty insurance policies for homeowners, renters, and condominium owners, a fact that consumer advocates say puts Illinois out of step with the rest of the nation. In his statement, Pritzker accused State Farm of raising rates in Illinois to cover losses the company has suffered in other high-risk states like Florida. These increases are predicated on catastrophic loss numbers that are entirely inconsistent with the Illinois Department of Insurance's own analysis, indicating that State Farm is shifting out-of-state costs onto the homeowners of our state, he said. Hardworking Illinoisans should not be paying more to protect beach houses in Florida. But State Farm strongly denied this suggestion, saying that the increases were directly related to the cost of weather-related disasters in Illinois. For example, last year in the state of Illinois alone, We paid out more than $638 million in hail damage claims, State Farm spokeswoman Gina Morris Fisher said in an interview. That was just in Illinois, and it was second only to the state of Texas. And this is the kind of thing that we've started to see more frequently. And of course, we're also seeing the increase in replacement costs, longer rates for replacement materials. And these are all things that contribute to the need to make this difficult business decision. Other business news, Michigan auto seating manufacturer established a normal facility supply to Rivian. A Michigan-based automotive seating manufacturer will establish a facility in Normal to assemble products for Rivian Automotive's electric vehicles, Governor J.B. Pritzker's office announced on Monday. The company, Adient, plans to invest more than $8 million into repurposing an 85,000 square foot warehouse at 2601 West College Avenue, which is directly south of Rivian's plant. The company will receive a more than $4 million incentive package through the state's Reimagining Energy and Vehicles program, called REV Illinois. It is anticipated that the project will create 75 full-time jobs. Adient's new facility in Normal is a critical investment in our state's growing EV ecosystem and supply chain, Pritzker said in a statement. With yet another global company choosing to locate in Illinois, we're creating more jobs, opportunities, and bolstering economic development for the people of Illinois. The company, which reported more than $14 billion in sales last year, operates more than 200 assembly plants across 29 countries and employs more than 70,000 people. It designs, develops, and manufactures seating systems and components for all major automakers. In Normal, the company will produce complete front and rear seat assemblies for Rivian, according to the release. Having suppliers like Adient located near our plant in Normal will be a key enabler when we increase production next year to build R2, said Carlo Matarazzo, Rivian's vice president of manufacturing operations. Integrating suppliers on-site reduces costs and improves manufacturing efficiency. Normal Mayor Chris Coos said he was excited to welcome the company to the community. This addition of a manufacturing partner in our community is good for more than Normal, Bloomington, and McLean County, he said in a statement. All of Central Illinois will benefit from the creation of jobs, a stronger economy, and a foundation for future growth. Pritzker has made attracting businesses in the electric vehicle industry a cornerstone of his economic development agenda. Illinois policymakers have set a goal of having 1 million EVs on the state's roads by 2030. In 2021, the governor signed legislation that created REV, which offers companies a menu of incentives ranging from payroll tax credits for the jobs created and retained by a company's investment to credits for the cost of employee training, and exemptions on building materials with state utility taxes. So far, 24 agreements worth up to $1.1 billion in tax credits have been inked, including two with Rivian. State officials last year announced an $827 million incentive package, including $634 million through REV, enabling the EV automaker to expand manufacturing in Normal and accommodate production of the R2, which was previously slated for production at a facility the company is building in Georgia. A smaller $16 million incentive package, including $5 million through REV, was announced earlier this year to support the $120 million build-out of a 1.2 million square foot site directly across from Rivian's manufacturing facility to host suppliers that produce the parts for its vehicles. The Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity confirmed last month that neither agreement has been placed in service yet, meaning Rivian has not yet received any of the agreed incentives, which will be dispersed over a period of 30 years. While Rivian's investments have been significant, Monday's announcement is a reflection of the state's efforts to build out the EV supply chain with smaller battery and parts producers. Adient plans to bring operations as soon as possible, the company said. Though under the terms of the agreement with the state, they will have until the end of September 2029 to reach 75 full-time jobs. Adient is pleased to leverage our global expertise in automotive seating to become part of the Normal community, said Company Executive Vice President Jim Conklin. And now turning to page 2 from the State House. sides at odds over spending of RTA sales tax cash. The Taxpayers Federation of Illinois and the Regional Transportation Authority agree that a change to Illinois sales tax law will net the RTA an additional $150 million this year and another $225 million next year. That money will drastically reduce the impact of the looming $770 million fiscal cliff, which begins in January. The extra revenue was a result of the state expanding its sales tax to include more online purchases. In an internal RTA document, the Transit Authority mulls spending $44 million of that additional money this year on ADA paratransit operations and appears to leave the door open to even more spending expansions. Several months ago, the RTA claimed that its paratransit costs contributed $235 million to the looming $770 million fiscal cliff because the state only kicked in $10 million to the federally required program that provides heavily subsidized rides to people with disabilities who cannot use fixed-line transit. The RTA has been receiving huge federal dollars since the pandemic, but that money runs out at the end of this year. So the RTA believes spending the $44 million is justified because paratransit is supposed to receive a set portion of sales tax revenue. In 2025, the paratransit expenses are over budget, and it is the fiduciary responsibility of the RTA and the service boards to address that gap with available funding this year, said RTA spokesperson Rob Nash. However, the internal document also seemed to leave the door open a bit to using that new money for other purposes. A subsequent vote by the board would be needed to direct those funds to the ADA paratransit funding or other budget amendments via appropriations ordinance. Asked about further spending, Nash said the sales tax expansion is contributing to positive budget variance or operating reserves at each operating agency after covering their monthly operating expenses. Either way, some key legislators involved in the mass transit reform talks don't want the RTA to spend that unexpected $150 million now, preferring the agency wait till final legislation is approved and when the money can be used to alleviate the fiscal cliff's costs. We need everyone at the table offering and working on solutions to avoid the fiscal cliff that threatens transit services people rely on, and increasing spending right now does not advance that goal, said Representative Eva Dina Delgado, Democrat of Chicago, one of two House Democrats negotiators. Just like Springfield has a duty to fix the bigger problem, the RTA has an obligation to treat this moment with discipline. It's crisis cash, not extra spending money, said the other House Democratic negotiator, Representative Cam Buckner, Democrat of Chicago. One of the biggest obstacles to solving this transit problem is coming up with the money. The new sales tax revenue will help, but there's still a long way to go, and some major players are stepping up to complicate matters. The Illinois Realtors Association has dumped an unprecedented $300,000 into a special campaign committee that is running an online consumer awareness campaign, slamming some Democratic legislators ahead of the fall veto session. The online ads are targeting five state senators and 21 House members, a spokesperson from the statewide group said. The Senate-passed bill was declared dead on arrival in the House by Speaker Chris Welsh, but House members are bearing the brunt of the attacks likely because the bill is now in their chamber. An ad whacking Senator Laura Ellman, Democrat of Naperville, is particularly harsh. Ellman voted for the Senate's mass transit reform funding bill at the end of the spring session. That bill included a suburban real estate transfer tax, which was expected to raise millions to fund mass transit programs. The online spot features a photoshopped image of Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson and Senator Ellman standing in a commuter train as $100 bills float in the air around them. Senator Ellman voted to raise your property transfer taxes to bail out Brandon Johnson's failing CTA, the ad tells readers. Tell her to stop this crazy plan. The click-through link leads to the message. In the final hours of voting in Springfield, Illinois senators passed a 600% property tax for tax on families targeting only the suburbs. The intended recipient of these new taxes, Mayor Brandon Johnson's Chicago Transit Authority. The proposed real estate transfer tax increase ignores the glaring reality of the state's housing economy, said Illinois Realtor CEO Jeff Baker via the press release. This would add thousands of dollars of closing costs to every residential and commercial transaction in the Chicagoland area, slowing our real estate economy even more. This headline, Man Charged with Sex Abuse, by Tony Reed. A 31-year-old Decatur man described in police reports as a former church youth leader is now accused of having sexual relationships with several underage girls as young as 14. Jonathan D. Lyon appeared July 18th in Macon County Circuit Court and was arraigned on 3 counts of criminal sexual abuse. He had been arrested by Decatur Police Department officers July 16th after an investigation that also involved the Clinton Police Department, in whose jurisdiction some of the offenses are alleged to have taken place. Lyon was freed on pre-trial release and has yet to enter formal pleas to the charges. A sworn affidavit filed by Decatur Police Detective Christina Kamenetz described Lyon as serving as a youth leader with Grace Baptist Church. Kamenetz said the church's former pastor, the Reverend Joshua D. Smith, had confronted Lyon around 2021 or 22 about inappropriate videos of a suggestive sexual nature found on Lyon's TikTok account. Another video appeared to make allusions to underage girls. When Jonathan was confronted with this and told he can no longer act as youth leader, he admitted to an unknown porn addiction and agreed to counseling, which he did not complete and ultimately left the church, said Kamenetz. The Herald and Review left messages with Grace Baptist seeking comment. The church, whose website said it is currently seeking a senior pastor, did not immediately respond. The detective said the police began investigating the sexual abuse charges in 2023 and recently received more information from a woman who said she had been in a relationship with Lyon for 2 years. She said she did not have sex with Lyon until she was 18 and ended the relationship recently. She said she began to hear rumors that Jonathan had an unhealthy desire to be with underage girls, Kamenetz said. More digging by detectives then revealed a Decatur girl who said she started dating Lyon when she was 12 and he was 18. She is quoted as telling police she would sneak out of her house and he would pick her up in his vehicle. Then they would drive to various locations where she would perform sex acts. On one occasion, they stopped near a trailer park and were approached by police officers who wondered what was going on inside the vehicle. She stated that Jonathan had advised them he was her youth leader and that the two were just discussing the Word of God, said Kamenetz. Another girl described by police as dating Lyon for a year or more before she turned 16 had been with a defendant in a park in Clinton in March of 2022. Detectives from the Clinton Police Department started their own investigation of Lyon after officers responded to the park on reports of a suspicious vehicle and had questioned the defendant, the 16-year-old and another teenage girl he was with at the time. Kamenetz said detectives from both police departments had questioned Lyon after his arrest in Decatur on July 16th. He is quoted as admitting to talking to and messaging underage girls and said some of the messages were of a sexual nature. He is also quoted as saying he kissed the girl involved in the trailer park incident on approximately one occasion. He was then asked if the two of them had more intimate contact of a sexual nature. Jonathan stated that he could not remember if she had touched him or if he touched her, Kamenetz said. He also told police the touching was done over each other's clothes and did not involve bare flesh. Lyon is due back in court August 22nd for the appearance of his defense lawyer. In the meantime, the pretrial release conditions warn him to stay away from all alleged victims in the case and order him to wear a GPS monitor to track his movements. Officials ID a man pulled from Lake Shelbyville. A statement from the Moultrie County Sheriff's Office said the body of a Hidalgo man was recovered by divers Saturday night from Lake Shelbyville. The police named the man as Billy J. Briscoe, 43. He had been pronounced dead at the scene by Moultrie County Coroner Lynn Reed. The cause of death was listed as drowning. The Sheriff's Office statement said the alarm had been raised around 11:18 a.m. when deputies responded to the Coal Shaft Bridge area of the lake after an unoccupied boat had been sighted. Moultrie County then requested assistance from Moultrie County Dive Team, the Shelby County Dive Team, the Sullivan Fire Department, the U.S. Corps of Engineers, and the Illinois Department of Conservation Police to locate a missing boater, the statement said. Briscoe's remains were located by divers at 9:16 p.m., and he was pronounced deceased at 9:21. The Sheriff's Office said the circumstances that led to Briscoe's death remain under investigation. Residents call 911 after hearing gunfire. Residents of the area in the 100 in the 1100 block of North Illinois Street and East Leafland Avenue, called 911 after hearing a burst of gunfire late Friday night. Sergeant Steve Hagemeyer said the Decatur Police Department responding patrol officers found two spent shell casings in a grassy area. The officers made contact with somebody right there, and they said they heard 6 to 8 gunshots, he said. Hagemeyer said officers could see no signs of bullet damage, and there were no reports of anybody being injured. Ex-girlfriend accused of spray paint mess. A Decatur man who claims his ex-girlfriend of several years ago is waging a campaign to make his life a misery tells police she has struck again, this time using spray paint to deface his home. Sergeant Steve Hagemeyer with the Decatur Police Department said patrol officers were called to the 33-year-old man's home in the 900 block of West Marietta Street after its blue siding was blasted with black paint. It was sprayed randomly, covering approximately a 2-feet-by-15-feet section of the siding, Hagemeyer said. It occurred between Friday, July 18th at 10 p.m. and around 6 a.m. Saturday, so basically sometime overnight. Hagemeyer said the victim suspects his 34-year-old former girlfriend because he's had a history of trouble with her. He said she has been damaging his property and stealing items from him since they broke up several years ago, Hagemeyer added. A report has been sent back to our detective bureau. Man gets 7 years prison in plea deal, by Tony Reed. Jalen R. Souls, the Decatur man accused of threatening his girlfriend with a gun before fleeing police at speeds of more than 100 miles per hour on punctured tires, has been sent to prison for 7 years. The 29-year-old defendant took a plea deal that saw him admit to the unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon. 5 additional charges, including dealing in cocaine and aggravated fleeing, were dismissed as part of the deal negotiated by defense attorney Steve Jones. The case against Souls dates to around 4:30 a.m. December 26, 2024, when his 20-year-old girlfriend told police he had battered her during a dispute in a city liquor store. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department quotes her as saying she had then used her car to box in Souls' Jeep Sport utility vehicle at the intersection of North Community Drive and East Woodford Place. She said while she was talking to Jalen, he brandished a firearm from his right hip and said something to the effect of, "If you don't move your car, I'm going to shoot you," said Officer William Wilder, who signed the affidavit. Police caught up with Souls a short time later as he drove westbound on East Woodford Place, but the defendant roared away from the attempted traffic stop. Tire-shredded spikes were deployed by the police, but Souls blew through them and accelerated past 100 miles per hour as he fled with the vehicle lights turned off, according to police. Wilder said officers broke off the chase soon, but found him again. His girlfriend called to say she had arrived home at 6:50 a.m. to see a window had been opened in her home in the 2500 block of East Olive Street. Officers arrived just in time to observe Jalen letting a dog into the backyard, Wilder said. After he was arrested, a search of the house turned up 40 caliber ammunition and more than 10 grams of cocaine. A search of a van on the driveway used by Souls found almost 2 ounces more of the drug, a digital scale, and $5,000 in cash. And while police were dealing with all that, Wilder said they received reports that a gun had been discovered dumped in the street. The weapon had been found in the westbound lanes of East Mound Drive near North Camelot Drive, which was the flight path Souls had taken as he fled police. A check of court records shows that the defendant was on probation at the time of his arrest after being sentenced to 2 years prison in June of 2024. That sentence had followed a conviction out of Madison County on a charge of aggravated fleeing of police. And I think we'll pull a stop to part one. I'll be right back with part two in a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.